Welcome to the Smuggler's Den.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena, a great friendly atmosphere for playing a wide variety of games and for purchasing all of your gaming needs. Check them out online at GameEmpirePasadena.com. Welcome to episode 17. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes.
And I'm Ben Tully. I go by Scarlet Knight on the boards. You can contact us here at the podcast in a multitude of ways. Check us out on Facebook, search The Smuggler's Den. Or email us at our Gmail account, which is smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com.
You can also check me out at twitchtv.com, Tiny Grimes. I play far too often on there, and with Edge of Darkness just having dropped and me being out of town, it's pretty much all I have been doing. And on this Thursday, we'd like to announce a special upcoming edition of the Smuggler's Den. And what are we going to do, Ben?
I think what we should do, Tiny, is we should play each other live on Octagon using essentially new Edge of Darkness decks.
I call smugglers.
Fine. Of course you would, because you're that guy. I'll just have to beat you with the bad scum and villainy decks that are out there. I used air quotes there. I know people can't see me. Bad, in air quotes, scum and villainy decks. We'll see what happens.
Just so you know, whenever I stream, everyone goes, "Hey, where's Ben? Hey, Tiny, can you get Ben on here?"
Yeah. So, well, everybody's dreams will come true Thursday.
Exactly. Yep. So we'll play, we'll narrate the games, we'll do a mini podcast as well, all in one. So come by Thursday at what time, Ben?
Let's do 9:30 again.
9:30 a.m. Okay. That's 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. For those of you who are East Coasters, it's lunchtime. It's perfect.
Perfect.
And I'd like to thank Game Empire Pasadena for sponsoring officially now the Octagon Regional to end all regionals. They have put up three $20 gift certificates. This is in addition to Top Tier Gaming, putting up a trophy. A number of individuals are coming forward with various prizes. Ben has offered up some alternate affiliation cards for us. Takamish over at Tableflip has offered up some alternate art Red 5 cards, and the prizes keep pouring in. So thank you to everyone for making this a fun tournament. Now, if only I could do a little better, the tournament would be even better.
Well, have you played your third round yet?
I have not. I've only played two rounds. I went 3-2 in both of them, and they are both on Twitch TV. Do not watch the game against Neil unless you want to watch me make mistakes that will make you cringe. Or actually only one mistake, but it was a game-losing mistake.
There are multiple game-losing mistakes in that first game of yours.
Well, there was one doozy. All right, Ben, so how excited are you for Edge of Darkness? Has it been everything you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, I'm extremely stressed out. I cannot believe the total number of decks that are now out there floating around. And to some degree, I can't even believe how much these decks are interacting with each other. Every time somebody comes down and is like, "Oh, this is kind of a new one," I think to myself, I was like, "Well, this one probably can't be that good." And then all of a sudden, I'm like, "Yep, nope, that's a good deck too. So we'll put that one." That's the sixth new deck, new type of deck that I've never seen before. Well, that's just another one I'll have to try out and see what happens.
Yeah, I don't really know what to do at this point. All the decks I've tried are good, but none of them are great. And it's this weird feeling where I'm wondering if there's not going to be... I mean, it feels like there have to be the great decks, and we just haven't found them yet. But it's a really weird place for the meta to be in, or at least for me to be in.
Right. I mean, you're the type of guy who needs to know definitively what is the best four decks in the meta. And then if it's, you know, four decks and you want the best deck, it's how you tech for those four decks.
Exactly.
Specifically, but there doesn't seem to be that right now.
Yep, it's going to be really interesting as the meta sort of shakes out. And I think even more so than before, different metas are going to have their own top level decks. Like before, various metas were like, yeah, Navy's the best. And all the other metas were like, well, Sith Control's the best. Like, it's fine that your meta likes Navy, but Sith Control's the best. Whereas now it's just going to be like, well, there's five best decks and each meta is sort of shaped differently around the strength of one particular deck. And it's going to be really interesting, I think.
I think that's a really interesting topic, Tanya. And it's been something that I've been thinking about and spitballing with people within our own meta about how these new decks feel. And so one of the things that I've come away with is that I think we were all thinking that when this came out, there was going to be a number one deck. It was going to beat everything and it was going to be great. But I think what we've seen again is this, what really was the difference between like something like the Smuggler's Den and a really good Rebel deck, right? Where the Smuggler's Den won more consistently. It didn't win every time. If you had a bad draw, you would be screwed. If your opponent had a great draw, you'd be screwed. But consistently, you could maybe win 70 to 80% of your games. And the problem or the disadvantage to being Rebels was that maybe you'd only be able to win, you know, 50 to 60% of your games. And I think what it seems like, and this probably has completely to do with the pod mechanic, is that the new decks, these new decks are coming out, and they win pretty consistently. I mean, it's above 50%. I don't know if it's as consistent as the Smuggler's Den, but at the same time, I don't know if the Smuggler's Den will be as consistent with the new dark side deck types that are out there. And so I think it's really interesting how hard it is to define what the best deck in the meta is. You get this like kind of like core group of cards. You're like, well, these pods are really strong because of X, Y, and Z and how they interact with each other. But I don't know if we're ever going to see a best deck. And I don't know how that's going to affect you in the long run, being how competitive you are.
I'm sure we're going to have a best crop of decks that come out of this. But I think what's interesting is two things are happening. The first thing was a lot of good pods got resources and therefore have more built-in consistency. So you have Lando, you have the Falcon, both getting resources. Jabba has a resource. You have something like Bib Fortuna, who has three resources built right into him. You have all these resources that got influxed into the game. So that's half of it. The other half is because the top decks aren't being played as much. So for instance, we're not seeing just loads and loads of Force Chokes. At least I haven't been. It's like it used to be most of the games you'd see a deck with four Force Chokes. And because people are trying Scum, it makes me wonder if some of the decks I think are viable right now, as soon as people start going, wait, remember when Sith Control was amazing and still is? I'm going to run that. A lot of those decks that seemed really good aren't going to be as good. Basically, what I'm saying is, is it possible that we're just in like an extended period of new card Wednesday because there's so many cards and people are trying so many new, cool, interesting things that we're not seeing like those power decks just crushing these decks that should be getting crushed?
Well, don't you think there's more of a, at this point, it's more, it seems to be a little bit rocks, paper, scissor like, right? So you're talking about specifically a Sith deck that has a lot of direct damage. You're using Vader and the various Force Chokes. But if you were that deck, playing that deck, and you came across somebody who was playing a version of the Protecting Wookiees with maybe going all the way and having even the Guardians of Peace in there.
Yeah.
Right? And you have all of that Protect. I mean, it's still, you know, not only do you have all that Protect, but then you have your C-3PO back to cancel that one or two Force Lightnings that are a problem. Like, in that situation, that deck's not going to win. I mean, your Sith deck just won't have enough damage in it, especially if they have a good draw with their protectors.
Yeah, I ran into a someone playing a deck that had, you know, Chewie, and they got the Life Debt out, and they were running Han, and they got out... yeah, so they had Questionable Contacts out. And so I'm holding all these Force Chokes. And I'm like, okay, I could Force Choke his guy. He would soak it with one of his three Wookiees with three damage each, and then move it off with questionable contacts and kill my my resource weenie. So, right. Yeah, what am I supposed to do here? It was a really weird feeling to be holding direct damage and have it be worthless. Like, I just had never encountered that before. Even against Rebels, you could hit your own guy and then bounce it and kill a Y-Wing. This was the first time I'd ever played where it felt worthless.
Well, I mean, and I think that's what I was saying before, of maybe Devastating Sith is still, not maybe, it probably is still very much so, a very competitive deck. But now it loses, instead of 80% of the time it was winning, maybe it drops down to 75% or 70% because of decks like that. Because of decks that have draws that are very heavily protect. And it just seems like, it's a very interesting. And there's other times, and I think this is another example of it, and it probably also the effect of the new card Wednesday and everybody wanting to try new stuff that's going along with it, where you build a deck and it should, in theory, work. There's some synergy in there. The cards that you've picked out are fairly decent. And something will happen in that, first or second playtest deck game where either you have one of those god-awful draws, right? So, for example, like, I was playing a Capital Ship deck, and I had one of those draws where the first, two or three full hands, I saw only Capital Ships. And then I drew into my resources, and it was a full hand of resources. So I went from having all of my icons that I needed to do things and not enough resources to all of my resources and not enough icons on my units. Right. And that just affected me, like, right there. It's like, oh, maybe this deck isn't any good. Why is this, and it's that consistency. And the other side of that being, like, you're picking these cards as part of an objective, and only a third of your deck is this kind of filler stuff that you really don't want to have as part of your deck, but you have to because it's part of the objective set process, but you end up drawing exclusively into that third of your deck, and then the game's over.
Right. And that's one of the things I'm wondering about is there going to be just a sort of a handful, a upper slice of decks that where there aren't bad cards? Like, we'll take a segue here and talk about the Falcon's Pod. I think we can both agree the Falcon's Pod is awesome. Is it the best new pod? I don't know if I'm going to say that, but it's really good, and it's really good because it's really good top to bottom.
Right. It is a really good example, and I would say it's probably the best pod. It might even be the best pod.
Yeah,
game. It's really, really strong, and it's very, very consistent. It's got a lot of stuff, bang for your buck, in there.
Let's talk about why it is so consistent. So let's start with the basics. It has a resource.
Yep, it has a 2/2 resource, which comes with 2 force icons.
Yeah, that's amazing. When I saw that, I was like, wait, what's happening? How do I have a resource with 2 icons in my hand?
Right. That's the first time we've seen that.
Yeah, so that's really useful. It has the Falcon, which is utterly amazing. Like, if you play him in what I'm calling currently the HCF decks, which are the Han Chewie Falcon decks, and you're able to drop Chewie or Han after the Falcon strikes, and that way you can never really tactics down the Falcon. The Falcon is a really versatile card that's going to be both hard to kill and do some really cool tricks with.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of really interesting stuff with the Falcon. You attack. Almost it doesn't matter. Your opponent can do everything they want to get on the defensive end and do something to the Falcon. But it just doesn't matter. It's going to come back to your hand. As long as they can't do 3 damage before you have a chance to respond, which really in my mind is only having 3 heats of battle go off in an edge battle. Unless that happens, even if they win the edge battle and you're like, oh, well, the Falcon's going to die, you still have the ability to return it to your hand before it takes a lethal amount of damage.
Yep. And if you're running Echo Caverns, there's a good chance you can just pull off the unit damage anyway, so where they can't actually kill it. They can only drop it to 1 health remaining, and then you just bounce it.
Right, and or if it gets tactics out, if they have the ability to put 3 tactics on the Falcon. It's just it's a worthless card to put tactics on.
Yeah.
Because it's going to come right back to the player's hand.
And
it's an amazing staple card.
Right, and you might be thinking, like, well, it costs 5. But if you're paying 5 for that, attacking with it, dropping Han in, who costs 4, attacking with him, and then because, and this is really the key, that there are cards like Cloud City Guest Quarters and other resources that you can put in the deck, 5 is not as hampering as it once was.
Right. It's 5 resources for 2 units, essentially.
2 great units.
So eventually you run out of the Hans, Chewies, and Landos in your deck, though.
Yes, exactly. That's where it becomes difficult. Do you put in a worse unit? But another cool combo card with that is the Cloud City Operative.
Which is also in the objective set.
Exactly. So you can do really cool things with her. She comes into play. You move a focus from a target unit to another one with printed cost 2 or lower. It's just endless possibilities. You know, you attack with Han, then you attack with the Falcon, then you use the Falcon's ability, you drop in the Operative, you move Han's focus to some other dude. That's really strong. All right, Ben, so let's say you don't have your Cloud City Operative to bounce in with Han, the Falcon. So what are you going to do? Are there any other cards in the pod that could solve that problem?
Yeah, and so this is the thing, and so I just want to just cap off here, is not only does the Cloud City Operative have an amazing ability, but it's 2-2 with a white tactics icon. And so it can just be so versatile. If your opponent is very aggressive in their first turn using, you know, I can see this in the Empire, they use Mahdi to put into play an extra Stormtrooper, and they're like, oh, this is going to be great. I might have tactics out Mahdi too, but he's going to clear, and I have the Stormtrooper for defense. Your first turn can be really devastating because you put Cloud City Operative into play, you move it from one of the focus from the Mahdi to the Stormtrooper, and then you have a unit in play that is free to use a tactics icon.
Yep. And you also might have some nice blast damage to go with.
Yeah.
And let's say your Operative eludes you. Well, guess what? You've got another card to solve your problems.
Right. One of the other really strong cards in this objective set, and by other I mean one, the fourth of the fifth amazing, or I guess 4 of 6 amazing cards in this objective set, is Bamboozle, which is a two cost of Smugglers and Spies event, move 1 focus token from a target character unit to another target character unit.
Yeah, this I think is going to be the most meta-shifting card in the game right now. Because it's kind of like Jedi Mind Trick, only better.
Right, it doesn't have to be the Force. It removes something from your character to put it on their character. It's a very swingy card.
Yes.
It really pushes the game in your favor when you can play it properly.
I mean, to have a way for smugglers to just shut down Palpatine, you would think that would come in a bad pod. And instead it comes in like the best pod in the game. It's really a fantastic card. I've used it a number of times, and your opponent is just, there's nothing they can do. They just look at it and they're like, well, so Han gets to attack again, and now my best guy that I was saving is also locked down.
Right.
Great. It's really hard to work around. And then, of course, the fifth card, just throw in a Twist of Fate. You know, why not?
Why not include a Twist of Fate?
That's really good. And it's funny because
I was going to say, but rounding it out, all of these cards are good. All of these draw deck cards are great. And then the objective is amazing, too.
Yeah, it's a reaction after you win an edge battle, draw 1 card.
It's such a powerful card, and it was so, such a new ability to have in the first couple games I was playing that I kept forgetting to do it. Like, it was one of those things, like, I would attack, it would be an open board, I would be like, oh, attack, unopposed. And I was like, wait. Unopposed, I wouldn't an edge. Like, I need to draw a card. This is like, I just couldn't believe how many times I was drawing a card from this objective.
Yeah, me too. Especially since we've been kind of led to believe that smugglers have bad edge icons,
right?
And I've been finding that they win a lot of edge battles.
They can if they need to. And I guess a lot of them, most of the times when I was forgetting it was because it was unopposed and like.
Right.
There's not that whole buildup of placing cards and did I win or didn't I win? You automatically win. So here's a free card.
Exactly. You're going to lose a lot of the ones that if you go into edge battles, you have to win. But you're able to put out so many units with guys like Falcon and all the extra resources and all these little guys you get that you're usually able, especially with Bamboozle and the Operative, to lock down enough of their guys where you do get unopposed challenges through quite regularly. So, Ben, I think that with this whole box, there are all these new archetypes, and I listed them before our show, and I have like 15 here that just popped into my head. But one of them, I think, was the easiest to build, and that's the Han Chewie Falcon builds. And I think the Falcon plays a linchpin in that build. And so let's talk just briefly about how these new cards have affected what was essentially the Smuggler's Den before and has sort of morphed into the real Smuggler's Den, right? Like Jedi, who needs those stinking Jedi? Let's just be all smugglers. So the build seems to be the Falcon, Han, so that's nothing new, and then Chewie. So let's talk about Chewie's pod.
What do you mean nothing new?
Well, nothing new with Han. He's
The Han pod is not.
Yes. So what does Chewie add to this build, Ben? What does he replace?
Well, the thing that Chewie and his pod replace really obviously are the protectors in Secret of Yavin 4, objective. And so you have the objective set, which is Wookiee Life Debt, which gives all Wookiee units protect. And then the objective set comes with 3 Wookiee cards.
Yeah, not just 3 Wookiee cards. 3 pretty good ones. Yeah. Chewbacca being the mainstay. They all have 3 health. The 2 little guys only cost 2.
They're neutral, which is really nice. They cost 2 with 3 health.
Yeah, exactly. So the question I have for you, though, and this is where what I was talking about earlier with the new pack Wednesday scenario. So is this build without Guardians of the Peace only viable because people aren't just going crazy with Sith? And what I mean by that is by having to rely on Wookiee Life Debt, let's say you don't draw it and you run into a Sith control deck that's running a ton of direct damage, how worried are you that all your guys are just going to melt before this direct damage?
Worried, but I don't know if I'm overly worried. Mainly because, unlike a deck that was running before Smuggler's Den was kind of a common, or Smuggler's Cavern was a common term, unlike the first 2 weeks or whatever of playing the game, where you just played a card and hope that they didn't play Vader with a Force Choke, and cards like Yoda and Han, there's a lot of health that those Force Chokes have to go through. So if you only have the 4 and you don't see the Vader early and they use up the Force Chokes pretty early and like fast, quickly, they put a lot of effort to take out a Han early, eventually they'll run out of them. And then you still have these high health capacity units that are coming into play. You still have a 2-for-3 Wookiee warrior that's just going to be put into play, and they might not have enough direct damage in to deal with it.
Yeah, I think the Wookiees are still going to be strong despite life debt. And one of the reasons is the card Let the Wookiee Win. And I feel like this is another one of those absolutely meta-shaping cards. Light side getting direct damage for free. It's Force Choke. Like, light side getting a Force Choke is really, I think, earth-shattering for the meta.
I've seen the combos that come out just in this 1 week already. The combos that come out of Let the Wookiee Win and Chewbacca are really just kind of mind-blowing. I've seen entire boards wiped just based on those 2 cards alone in like just a few action windows.
Yeah, definitely. But even at its most basic, like, it just makes me feel like Mahdi's pod is not as good anymore. Knowing that you can let the Wookiee win, either twice on Mahdi or once on him in questionable context, the other one over to him, or they play the duty officer and you just immediately let the Wookiee win against him. It's a great way to trigger questionable context, and it's a great way to instantly kill resource chuds. So my question is, does this limit the usefulness of resource chuds at all?
Especially, it probably limits the 1 health ones a lot. Again, if you as a dark side player can put out multiple 2 or 3 health unit cards, Let the Wookiee Win becomes a little bit less impactful because they have to put so much effort and do and so much damage to their own units to take it out. But it definitely does impact, like you said, the duty officer. It'll impact what the advisor, what's a,
yep, the dark advisor.
The dark advisor in the Council of the Sith Pod.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Yeah. So it'll affect the dark advisor in the Council of the Sith Pod really easily. It affects Captain Nita really easily, who is a new card that we've seen to play, who's a 3-for-1 health capacity. Very dangerous to put on the board in that situation.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I rank, you know, pods in my head. And after playing with this card, Mahdi has dropped substantially to where if I need a resource pod, I'm probably going Death Squadron Command instead of Mahdi because it has a 2-cost resource chud and it has a 3-cost enhancement. And we'll get to that in a minute, why a 3-cost enhancement is safer than a 2-cost enhancement now.
Right. And then you have a Heat of Battle to round out the objective set. So that's pretty good. And so...
All right. Yeah, so Chewbacca's pod plays a foundational role. So it feels like, and this was basically like, the box dropped and I looked at it and was like, okay, Han, Chewie, and Falcon, they naturally synergize really well. They also synergize really well with Echo Caverns and that pod, especially with all the capture, Renegade Squadron becomes really good. And so the question then was, and still is, how do you round this set out? What's the fifth set you put in there, or what are the 9th and 10th objectives that you put in there?
Well, I mean, this is kind of one of those things that becomes a really choice play, right? It's your choice as a player. It's your choice depending on what your friends and your meta mates are doing locally. You can go any number of directions. We've already talked about potentially including the Guardians here, the Guardians of Peace in the Secrets of Yavin, using the Secret of Yavin 4 objective. You could include something like Luke, where you could then have the Millennium Falcon not only dropping Han and Chewie into play, but you could be dropping Luke into play, who has his targeted strike as well. You could run it with any of the rest of the Smugglers and Spies objective sets that we got in the box, and one of them it seems to fit also naturally with the group. And you know, to the Star Wars fan in me is excited about it because it includes Lando. So you have Han, Chewie, the Falcon, and Lando in one deck. And that doesn't seem like, you know, that seems pretty cool to me.
Yeah. I started with one copy of the Jedi Guardians or the Guardians of Peace and one copy of Luke. And I liked it. But I looked at Lando, and Lando is just phenomenal. So I've subbed in Lando for now. And the question it still seems to be to me is, how prominent is Sith control going to be? If it's going to be 85% of the decks, I don't think you want to go with a Lando variant because he dies quite easily to Sith control unless you get lucky and get Life Debt out. But if they can't kill him, holy mackerel, Lando plus Echo Caverns is insanity. I played a game where... you know, the person attacked with their, you know, even if they, like, try to block with Palpatine, you don't have to have Lando unfocused. You just need a resource available. You focus it, Palpatine's out, you Echo Caverns off one of his tactics icons onto, say, your munitions officer or something ridiculous, and then you tactics Palpatine.
I've seen a whole bunch of really cool things. I was playing against John in our meta, and he just... it was very interesting because he was making plays that I wasn't really thinking about making in my head. And so then was one play I can remember in particular. I defended, I think it was probably with like a stormtrooper squad. So it was the 2-2 with 2 blasters. I won the edge and then he triggered Lando. And I was like, oh, well, I'll remove my stormtroopers from the battle. He's like, no. I'll remove Lando from the battle. And so he removed Lando from the battle.
Yep.
My stormtroopers there were completely useless, right? They struck at nothing. They did no damage to anybody. They focused. And then he struck with Lando in the third objective that he had and, you know, still did his tactics and still did the blast damage that went along with it. And I just was like, oh, I was only going to just remove the stormtroopers. I was like, yeah, but you know, now I can tactics out somebody else on top of that, right? Like, it didn't have to be, like, I would have still had to tactics the stormtroopers somehow if they had defended effect, you know, if they had, if I either had to, stop them with a tactic so that they couldn't defend, or, you know, they got removed and they would still be able to defend the next battle. And so I was just like, that was really cool to see.
Yeah, and I love the synergy with Han, of course, that you can attack with Han, do your one ping, kill a resource chud, pull Han out with Lando, you know, make them defend because they have to. Han has targeted strike, right? You make them put the cards in to win the edge battle or that guy dies, and then you just pull Han out and then attack again with his ping.
Right. As long as there's no heated battles in that objective stack, you're doing pretty well.
Yeah. So Lando alone is insane, but he is, just like Han, a 4-for-2. He's elite, which is phenomenal, but I'm scared of Sith control, and so we'll have to see if Sith control still dominates it. But one of the cards I'm most excited about, and it's in this pod, is the Saboteur. And when this unit enters play, discard a target enhancement with printed cost 2 or lower. And I saw this happen to you, Ben.
Yep.
You put out your 2-cost...
control room, yeah.
Yes, your 2-cost control room. Your opponent dropped a Saboteur on you, and you went, oh, there went my first turn.
The whole first turn was completely erased.
Yeah, it's such a strong card. And what I'm thinking is that it's funny because I'm worried that the Devastating Sith counters this deck, but I'm also worried this deck counters the Devastating Sith because it has to set up all these resources,
right?
And there's Saboteur, and there's Wamboozled to go ahead and knock out Palpatine. There's all these ways to crush the Devastating Sith.
And again, going right back to where we started on, that just probably seems to me like the Devastating Sith probably has gone down in its consistency of how often it will win in the current meta environment. You know, yeah, instead of seeing that 80% where it dominates, you're going to see a lot of times that even when you get the perfect setup, say you get all of your resources that you want, or you see all the resources that you need, there's a lot of options here on the light side to get rid of them. And you're going to lose them. And then once those are gone, that perfect setup, which you needed to transition into your amazing second half of the game where you put in your Palpatine and your Vader and you take control of the game, yada, 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 just doesn't happen. And instead of it happening naturally, you know, or randomly because you don't get the right cards in your draw, it's now happening because you get the right cards in your draw and your opponent is crushing you using the cards that they get.
Yeah, the game's getting really interesting. And Sabotage. I haven't gotten to use this card yet.
I haven't got to use it yet either.
But
I keep just wanting to. I keep saving it back, and then they'll attack with, like, you know, one guy, and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
I guess Sabotage. I'm just going to get rid of it and draw an extra card next turn.
Yeah, it's hard to save two back. It really is. But I thought of something interesting. If you can get an objective down to, like, 4, and they have Palpatine, and they're blocking with him every time, all you have to do is get a target of opportunity off, the objective blows up, and then you get to kill Palpatine.
Right.
So you could attack with something minor.
Do it offensively.
Right. So you could attack with something minor, and just because they're like, cool, they attacked with that guy, I can block with Palpatine and tactics out their whole board? Awesome. Oh, Palpatine's dead. That's unfortunate.
I hadn't thought of it as an offensive weapon. I really only thought about it defensively. But yeah, that could really lure somebody into problems too.
Yeah, it's hard with two, like I said, to hold two back. Your opponent's probably going, what's that? But I'm going to be honest here, Ben, and I hate to be honest like this. I don't know all the Smuggler's events right now. There's too many. I don't know what pods they're in. If someone's holding two Smugglers back right now, I'm probably going, I don't know what they're doing. They probably have a Swindled.
Bamboozle.
Yeah, maybe they have a Bamboozle. I don't even think I would consider, oh, they have a Sabotage because they're playing Lando's pod.
Right.
Like, I've just not quite gotten to where I'm comfortable enough with the pool where I know every single event and all the pods that they're in.
Yeah, there's a lot of new stuff. I can understand why you don't know it spontaneously the 1 week later.
And the funny thing is, it makes me feel really weird when I play. Like, I usually play with a mindset of thinking ahead a couple turns, and everything is a well-thought-out move. And this week has been like, well, I guess I'll see how this goes. I don't know what he could even have. Oh, yeah, he had those three things. Oh, yep, that screwed me. That's been a weird feeling.
I can see that.
So what other archetypes are exciting you?
Do you want to just talk about specifically light side for right now, or do we want
to get into... No, we can do both.
Okay. I mean, there's been a bunch. I think there is a bunch that are actually unlike maybe other times in the game. I think there are a bunch of archetypes that are actually really, really strong and are really good counters to some of the decks out there. And so I really like it and haven't even gotten a chance to play it, but just enjoy the way it looks and the way it feels and how it crushed my soul when it played against me, which is a version of the deck that heavily uses Blockade Runner and Flue Scout as a way of attacking and doing damage to your opponent's objectives.
Yeah, I think that's a really good deck too. Some sort of smuggler vehicles. And the cool thing is, it basically lets you put these vehicles that can't be blocked together with things like Rebel Assault, which is really difficult. And so specifically, across the Anowet sector, that ability of each smuggler unit you control gains a black blast icon whilst attacking alone is insane with Slew Scouts and Blockade Runner.
Right. And so I've heard horror stories for this card already. Things that have included something along the lines of, I had two across the Anowet sectors out, and I attacked with my Slew Scout that had an Astromech droid on it, and I took out an objective, two objectives on my first turn. Because yeah. I used, some other thing to move focus around or whatever it was. I forget exactly the scenario. But yeah, it was a quick, like, that game was over and, I think the dial was at 4.
Right. Yeah, I've had, I played the deck a little earlier and I got two of them. And it was against a scum control deck that didn't really do any damage. And I had both of them on the board the entire game.
Right.
And it was really crazy.
And so I think, so the objective here is pretty good. The objective set is really good. It comes with two of the Slew Scouts. I'm looking at the across the Noat. Isn't it? It's a Noat sector, isn't it?
Sure.
Not that you would know.
I don't know.
How to pronounce the names of the – have you ever even watched the movies?
I love the movies, Ben. Come on now.
Uh-huh. I mean, one of the other good cards that's really strong in that one is Over My Dead Body. When a unit in play executes an action or reaction ability, cancel that ability's effect. I mean, in terms of strength, it's maybe not the same as Bamboozle because it's a response effect. It's a cancel where you're relying on your opponent to do something. So if you're relying on your opponent to do something and you have it in your hand, it may be a dead card for a while. That one time your opponent force chokes one of their own guys and is like, okay, now I use Vader's damage to destroy your really important Slew Scout. You can be like, well, no, I'm going to use Over My Dead Body and cancel that.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't been able to use it yet. I've had it in my hand a lot of times, and I haven't been able to use it yet. But I'm looking forward to that matchup where they have that guy like Vader on the table where I can use it.
Right. And so, one of the things, and I think there's a number of versions of this deck. And so you've mentioned, a smuggler's vehicle deck. And I think that's a different archetype than the Slew Scout Tentative 4 archetype,
because you think the Blockade Runner.
Oh, sorry. The Blockade Runner, it looks like the 10 and a 4. Yes. That's the second time today I've done that now. Talking about it independently earlier, I called it a 10-4, and I was like, wait, why are you playing that? Can't you just play Blockade Runner? And I was like, that's what I mean. Let's play Blockade Runner instead. And so you have the Blockade Runners, you have the Slew Scouts. What I've seen play very effectively, and this is Neil, this is our deck wizard here in Southern California, Neil. What he's done is included other pods that are, not ideal for the setup. So they included Han, and what I've seen, and then so the first time I saw him play it, he used Han in an edge battle, and I was like, oh, that makes me feel really good. He must feel really desperate that he has to use Han in an edge battle, but he's not using Han's pod for Han. He's using it for the Swindled there.
Right.
And so he has four Swindleds in the deck. He then also uses Colsera. Again, not for Colsera, but for the Renegade Squadron X-Wing, which acts as another Swindled, and then includes on top of that one copy of the Defensive Yavin 4, which comes with two copies, you know, so you have two copies of Rebel Assault. And the whole game plan, the whole setup that he's hoping for in that situation is get Sleuth Scouts out or Blockade Runners out. They can't defend with their big guys. Anytime they put a little guy on the field, it either gets swindled or blown up with Rebel Assault. And then there's nothing they can do about it. It just, and then the deck will just win because you can go in and strike those objectives unopposed. And you go boom, boom, take it out, boom, boom, take it out. And, you know, maybe you're winning on the second or third turn, depending on how quickly you can set that up.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting, actually. I hadn't tried that specific build, so.
Sorry, Neil, for giving away your deck to the entire world.
Yeah, and letting me steal it on the air.
No, now you're stealing it on the air. So when you try and name it, not only will we all know that you're a thief and a stealer and a liar and a no good person, but now everybody in broadcast land knows as well.
Yeah, but I'll name it Neil's Deck.
Well, there you go. That's, I feel like, it's appropriate. Or you can let Neil name it and just be calling. You could call it like the Smuggler's Run.
There you go.
By Neil.
By Neil. Yeah, the version I was running was a little bit more based on having protection for the Sleuth Scouts and Rebel Blockade Runner. So I was thinking, by putting in the ships with Protect, they have the Black Blast icon already on them. Then you put in the Sleuth Scouts, then the Blockade Runner, then Red 2, and then Echo Caverns. Mainly Echo Caverns because Renegade Squadron is amazing right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's I understand what you're saying there. I think that's just a different type of deck, right? I think a vehicle deck, you know, uses the protector pod, the vehicle protector pod. It doesn't include the Falcon. It includes Renegade Squadrons. It includes Home One, so you can get access to the repair droid. I think that's really a key. And then you can have some type of vehicle deck where you're not falling victim to the Force chokes. It's probably a little bit more tricky than a straight Rebel deck where you're hoping for some type of really heavy hitting combo with your speeders and your wedge combo with Rogue 3 and things like that.
Yep. A deck I haven't built yet that I'm interested in doing is a weapons deck. And so I was thinking, and I saw somebody play this against me last week, and I think it was John, but they were playing with the emplacement. And if you're playing to the arms or two arms, you have the searches for emplacements. So you can go get your emplacements. So now it's not just, well, I hope I get my emplacement early. If I don't and I get it late game, it might be useless. You always get it early.
Right.
And then I was thinking about putting in proximity mine so that now there's also this thing like, yeah, are you sure you want to attack? Because I'm going to blow up all your dudes. And then you can put in other stuff. Maybe it be Echo Caverns or Luke's Pod to get Trust Your Feelings. But some way to use these weapons, to be able to use the engineer to pull off the focus from them and just repeatedly use them and search them out. That seems pretty strong to me.
Yeah, I can see why that would be strong. It seems more combo-y, right?
Yes,
seems like
definitely.
Much more of a combo-style deck where when you can get all the pieces together, you're relying on those pieces in a certain way. Not to say that the Sleuth Scout isn't combo-y. It just seems to, there's a couple times I've seen to play it because of the way the tricks work out and your goals. As long as you get one of your do not defend, you know, cannot defend cost three or higher cards into play, you're already much, you know, that's all you really need. As
right.
opposed to this where you want both of your heavy blaster emplacements. You want to see your proximity mine to deter the attacks, that type of thing.
Yeah, but the nice thing is since you have Hidden Cache, which is the event card that lets you go search them out for only one, you should, in theory, I would think, be getting an emplacement first turn because you essentially have four in your deck. So you're either paying one or you're paying zero for it.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I haven't tried it yet. It just seems that, in theory, it could be a good deck.
Could do a lot of damage.
Yep. And then, of course, you could combo with stuff like weapon mastery and, you know, go search out weapons, put them on your guys, use weapon mastery and do crazy stuff with them.
Right. I mean, but weapon mastery requires the specific guys that you're hoping for there to be Han or Chewie.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, and these are probably different decks that I'm thinking of. So I was thinking of the Force user archetype that I think is going to be pretty cool as well.
Okay. Getting the Jedi lightsabers and things like
that. Yeah, exactly. So are there any other archetypes that you're really excited about?
Well, yeah, so we talked a lot about light side. We've covered a lot of ground today already. I can't believe we've only talked about kind of one pod. Well, I guess maybe all of the pods in that one straight smuggler's deck. And then a couple of other key cards and deck ideas. And we haven't even touched the dark side yet.
Wait, dark side got cards too?
I don't know if you're aware of this, but dark side got cards too.
Oh my goodness, I should have opened that side. I thought it was duplicates.
I didn't realize that other sealed one with the green color was different. Dark side is a little bit more... It's a little less obvious the different types of decks that I want to build there. I've been still working really hard to make a competitive scum-based deck. And so at first, you know, I was like, okay, well, we'll just put in, obviously we want to put in two of Slave One and two of Jabba, and we want lucrative contracts in there. We'll put two of those in. And it just wasn't working. So maybe part of the reason was because then I went all the way back and I was like, I'm going to include Boba Fett now.
Oh my.
Yeah. And he's
New card Wednesday.
Really still just as bad. That two health is just so crippling for him. He comes in with such a big target on his head. You know, the one time I played him, I got to play him twice in two games. One game I played him, you know, it was one turn later, Han came out, he was dead. The other game I played him, I got him, and on the same turn got his Mandalorian armor, put it on him, and I was like, hey, this is pretty good. And then had this awful problem where every one of the units that my opponent had in play had two health. And so they were all going to die, and he was never going to get to capture anything, and I was relying on Boba Fett's capture as part of that deck.
Ah, gotcha.
And so I was like, well, this is just as useless as if he was dead. Because all he's doing now is tacticing out units, and he's not supposed to be doing that. He's supposed to be capturing them.
Right. Yeah, I of course have made some scum decks as well, and...
That's not to say, I was going to say, not to say that I haven't come up with a deck that I think is more competitive than the first of stuff.
What is it, man? Lay it for us.
It uses a bunch of one-ofs. I don't know if I can remember it off the top of my hand, because it is so many one-ofs. But it was something along the lines of...
Ben, is it a secret deck?
No, it's definitely not a secret deck. It is... let me think about this. It's two Jabba... Two of the Sarlacc Bib Fortuna decks, or objective sets. That's four. It's one copy of Slave One. It's one copy of the Jawas. It might be two copies of the Jawas. That would be seven. And then it's like one copy of the Hunt for Solo. It's one copy of the other one, the Jabba's Reach.
That Jabba's Orders, I think is what
Jabba's Orders. One copy of Jabba's Orders. So that gives you the Weequays. That gives you the Z95 Headhunters in duplicate, right? So I don't want to see four Z95 Headhunters. I just don't want to. And so having only two of them gives you a little bit of flexibility in the types of capture you can do. The objective for the Hunt for Han Solo has a really nice way of cranking the dial if you can get the right set of cards to combo with it. And then there's probably, It's probably one. Oh, there's one copy of Bossk. And so that was one of those things of, again, I don't want to see four Trandoshan Hunters.
Reasonable.
Yep. Bossk is an okay card. There are some times that he's amazing. You put him into play, you take off his, you know, use the two, resources to take him off, to capture somebody. I mean, to capture a unit, you know, whatever that situation may be. It also comes with a bounty, which is really strong. And then I think I have one X of the Kryat Dragon objective. And I think that's 10 right there. And I think that's what it is. So it's four one-ofs and then two duplicates, including duplicates of the Jawas. And it played really well. I mean, it kept the dial really high. The one time it lost, and the one time it won, it won very effectively. And one of the really big things, and this is one of the things that the rest of the meta had felt out, and I kind of just latched onto, was how effective it is to use the Sarlacc's objective in combination with the Almighty Sarlacc enhancement. And putting units on there that you don't want to see again, and damaging it to get to take off your focus on there, drawing a card, and then sacrificing the attached captured card to heal it by one and draw a card. And so that was, that's been really effective. I heard Neil, he played against Gabe the other day while we were sitting around, and thanks to that card being there, Gabe kept trying to take it out, and he kept just having not enough to do it. And then once there wasn't enough, Neil would cycle through really quickly and discard a bunch of captured cards there. And I think they said it was something like 11 damage was done that just didn't get through because of the way that card was able to heal itself over and over again.
Wow. Yeah, it seems like it could be really nasty with 2x the crash and 2x slave 1, so that the crash is always getting cards. Slave 1's objective can move it down to the Sarlacc if it's a good card, like if it's a good unit, and then you can just sacrifice it and get rid of it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Slave 1 is it just isn't good if you haven't captured your cards, right? And so I didn't want it and the rest of the objective clogging up the deck when I didn't have any cards captured, right? So sometimes it just happens like that, and that's kind of one of the downsides to Scum, is that you can have all these cards that are designed to capture things, and it just doesn't happen.
See, I feel like if you're playing the capture pods, like if you're playing two of the Jawas and you're playing, even just two of the Jawas, you get the Tatooine Crash, you get two Utinis. If you're playing one or two lucrative contracts and you have explosive
charge. Well, I
wasn't
playing any lucrative contracts.
Okay. It just feels like you should mostly be having a card. And even if you have one, Slave 1 becomes better.
Sure. And it doesn't have elite, though, so it gets tactics out really early.
Yes, that's true. But Traitorous Wingard is crazy good.
Yeah, the 1-for-1 that gives you if there's a captured card. Yeah, it's just a weenie, though.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. It is just kind of a weenie that can sometimes be good and can sometimes push through the hurt and the damage. But overall, I don't think that pod is the best.
That's interesting, because I really like it, because
it has a resource. That's why I included it. Tractor Beam is kind of a terrible card if you're only running Slave 1, and I guess because you have Bib Fortuna, you have the Pleasure Barge, but if you're only running Slave 1 and your opponent runs no vehicles that are less than 5, I mean, that's the problem with Tractor Beam, right? It has to be less than 5. Yeah. And so if they're only running something like the Smuggler's version that we were talking about before, where they have the Falcon that's 5 and Renegade Squadron, which is 5. You can't use it. It's a dead card.
Yeah, but it's 3 icons. It's so nice to be able to toss in.
But you never want to see it when you want to see something that can actually capture cards or something like that.
Yeah. The problem to me is it's cost 2. I actually put it in a deck where it's somewhat similar to yours. So I have a couple one-ofs. I have Jabba's Orders, one Hunt for Solo. Then I have 2 Jabbas, 2 Crash, 2 Slave 1, and then 2 deploy the fleet, which is basically the Death Squadron Command, the Weenie, and it's basically a blast damage deck. It captures and it does blast damage, but it doesn't do it particularly well. Like, I keep thinking this deck is going to be good, and then it's never that good.
Right. I mean, I like I said, the I was pretty happy with the version I played, the all Scum pods. It relies a lot on the synergy of the capture. It's pretty, and so that was the thing. And you can ask, Tiny can ask, not everybody in listening to the podcast can ask. I showed up on Saturday for our playtesting day that we did, and I had a cheat sheet, and I had written down all of the Scum pods, and I had if it had either a resource in it or a capture. Or if it had both, there was one of them I had written down the notes. Which one was that one? Oh, that was the Hunt for Solo. I had written down something like, it has weak capture, because the Z95s are weak capture, but it has a resource, and then it also has weak control, right? Like, and these were my notes, and so I was like, okay, so what I want is I want five objectives that have resources, and I want five objectives that have capture.
Mm.
And then that was what I did, and that's what I put together.
Interesting. Yeah, it's. I feel like the meta is in a really interesting spot right now, where, like, is Scum good or not? You know, I don't know. I can't tell.
Unlike all those other times when Rebels were still hurting, and we were like, are Rebels good? And it was definitively no. This time I'm like, I want Scum to be good.
Yeah,
I do really bad. I mean, we know that, you know, there's still another Scum objective to come from the force packs coming up from the Hoth stuff. It's going to have Dengar. That's another bounty hunter.
Oh, yeah, true. It's interesting because I played against a guy today who had a 10 Scum pod, and that corrupt official was so freaking annoying.
Yeah, that's what Neil was using to mitigate that 11. Neil had Feeding the Pit on the table, and every time Gabe thought he had enough to destroy it, Neil would play a corrupt official, cancel just enough damage that it didn't blow up, and then he would feed a bunch of things using the Almighty Sarlacc to do that combo of feeding and healing and removing focus, and then feeding and healing and removing focus, and did that a bunch of times. And that's where that 11 damage mitigation came from.
Right. That's funny.
It's really hard. I mean, it's very hard for a light side deck if you can prevent 11 points of damage from hitting the objectives.
Yeah, I think you just have to not go for that objective at that point.
Yeah.
Like, it's just too much. But I definitely agree with what you're saying. It feels like Scum has a lot of one-offs. Lucrative Contracts feels like a one-of because of the two corrupt officials. Hunt for Solo is a one-of with the two headhunters. The weak ways, I'd be okay with having four, but even them without any blast damage, so reliant on capturing stuff, they could be a one-of. The Tatooine Crash with the two Jawas might be a one-of. It's very interesting how Scum tends to be a little bit more naturally suited towards one-ofs.
Yeah, I mean, it's with the, like I said, like we pointed out, it's those double characters in there.
Yep.
Right? The Gamorrean Guard, I don't want to see four of those at one time.
Oh, I had that too. I had three of them on the board and another one in hand.
Right.
It was horrible.
You just don't want to see it. It's just like, and so it's interesting that, it's just interesting that that's the way that the game is situated, especially Scum. That because the Scum have those duplicates that you might not want to see, and that makes it really much more an inconsistent type of deck. Mm. And I've always wondered if that was part of FFG's plan, that capture, in playtest, capture is such a strong ability that you have to have a way of it being slightly more kind of wishy-washy when it actually comes out to play, because otherwise it just takes over and Scum and Villainy spills over to be the best deck.
Yeah, Scum and Villainy, or the capture mechanic as a whole, feels like the hardest one to balance. I think you're right, that if it sways too strong, not only is it strong, but it's an NPE experience, right? Your opponent has no fun. You just capture all their dudes, and there isn't anything they can do. But if it's too weak, then it's like, so what? So you captured a card from my command deck. Wow, yay. It's not really getting you anything.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, that's definitely the problem.
Oh, well, let's talk about what we think are, say, the three best Scum cards, or the three meta-changing Scum cards, we'll say.
Okay. Well, I think the first one and most obvious one is going to be Reversal of Fate.
Yes, I would have to agree with that.
Just as a side note here, Tiny, we think now, based on what we've done in terms of reading the card, which I'm sure you probably haven't even done yet.
Wait, you guys read it?
Also looking in the rule book, we think that both players have to have an edge stack to use this card.
Yeah, originally I thought that was not the case. Some playtesters have actually come out and said that you do both have to have edge stacks.
Because it says when you're done placing edge cards, before edge stacks are revealed, you only form an edge stack by placing a card into it. If you don't place a card, you don't have an edge stack.
Yes, I think you're right on that one, which is going to make it a trickier card to pull off.
Right.
Which I like.
Before it was ridiculously, the way I sat down on Thursday and you guys were like, no, Reversal of Fate works this way, definitely. And I was like, wow, this is really broken, because essentially all you would do is let your opponent place a card, you play Reversal of Fate, and you automatically won.
Yep.
And now, you know, before all you had to do was worry about them placing a Twist of Fate and it kind of boning you because they canceled the edge deck that you were hoping to win automatically anyway. Now it's one of those things where, like, if they put down a one and you put down a one and say pass, and they're passing because you think,
right,
they think it's like a trick, you do that switch. If you're on offense, they still win.
Yeah. It's going to make for a very interesting card. What I really want to do is just start putting in resources. Like, okay, right, there's my one.
That's the only way you could really be safe in that situation, is if you had a zero force icon card to put into play, which is, it's just unfortunate that's one of your resources, because you really want to play all your resources, especially early in the game. Right. But, you know, I mean, I think it's one of those things where you should only play it in those situations where, like, before you could do it offensively and your opponent could be like, I'm going to keep them from winning that edge battle. I'm going to put all of my cards into it. I'll stop them.
Right.
So now it's like one of those things where you can use it on defense, where your opponent's like, I have to win this edge battle, and you can make it easier on yourself to know that you'll definitively win that edge battle, as opposed to them, you know, and using it, having a trick to win that edge battle, as opposed to, like I said before, where being offensive and it was very aggressive and you could just win whatever edge battle you felt like. Now it's a little bit more strategic.
Yeah. I feel like it's a really important card to have in the metagame, because it, you know, a lot of games come down to the one edge battle. You know, we've talked about this. Really good players are able to isolate. This is the only edge battle that matters this game. And does that guy have a Reversal of Fate? I haven't seen it yet. They're playing Jabba's Pod. I don't know how many they're playing, one or two. It gets really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a strong card. So what's one of your meta-defining?
That would be one of them. Another one would be Spice Visions.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't actually been able to fully exploit this yet, but it just feels like this would be insane in a Sith deck. So you could have pretty much a standard Sith control deck. Instead of capital ships, you would have Feeding the Pit. The Crate Dragon could sort of fill in for capital ships. It has a bunch of blast. And then you can do insane things with Palpatine, where you're like, I'll block with Palpatine. I will do three tactics. I will Spice Visions. I will do three more tactics.
Right.
And this just seems nuts.
And this is one of those cards where I thought when I first read it, I didn't understand its full power, because I thought that you only were able to cancel focus that was being placed on your character by, like, an opponent's effect. I thought that's where the wording was. But when you look at the rule book and look at what the words are and where they're defined and, like, what the various aspects mean, you can do it when you strike. You place focus when you strike, and you can instead use the interrupt to take damage instead of focus. And so then you, like you said, you get to strike again.
Yep. So that seems like it could be meta-changing. I haven't encountered it in its full usage yet, but it seems really strong.
I think Neil has one. He was calling it his Spiced Dragon deck.
Yeah, I think I ran into that Spiced Dragon deck, and it was pretty good.
Gabe's comment on that being, what, are you playing Magic now?
Well, you know, you got dragons now in the game.
Dragons everywhere. And so the third card, I mean, this is the problem, is I think there's a bunch of cards that are probably pretty well tied for third here.
Yeah, when I said three, that was a random number. I didn't actually mean three.
Well, and so I think honorable mentions go to cards like Jabba the Hutt. I think he's a very strong card. I think Jabba's Pleasure Barge can be a very strong card. It's a good way of removing focus. Bounty and Captured as ways of capturing units that are in play. I think those are really impressive cards that can be meta-defining. Utini.
Yes. Utini is so frustrating because it's in a pod that's really a staple of Scum decks because you get the auto capture. You don't have to run Cruel Interrogations. You don't have to run the Navy one where you capture. You just run Tatooine Crash and you get one every single turn.
Yep.
It's not once when you reveal it. It's every single turn.
Yeah, remember to trigger that reaction, people. You can stack up so many cards onto that one objective.
Yes.
Just by capturing it over and over again. I got close to decking somebody for the first time. They were playing a smuggler's deck that was drawing a lot of cards, but I was also capturing them. So I had like 10 cards captured, right? I had a fifth of their deck captured. They had a fifth of their deck in their hand. They were down to their last four cards. I was like, they were going to win. I was like, if I can just make you deck before you win.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be a mill deck. I don't think there quite is. I think they did a good job playtesting to make sure there's not a mill deck. I'd be happy to hear that I'm wrong, though. Someone has one. What's up?
Yet, there's no mill deck yet.
Yes, yet is the operative. I think for me, my meta-defining card might be the pod feeding the pit.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Just because I think Bip Fortuna might become the replacement for a lot of these decks that are control decks splashing in Navy. I think splashing in this pod may be the way to go because you get Spice Visions, you get Bib, you get the Krayt Dragon. It seems like a pretty strong way to splash in resources.
Yeah, I mean, the other cards kind of are kind of dead cards. You wouldn't really want to see, if you were playing this exclusively in a Sith control deck and this was your, you know, outside card, to replace Mahdi, let's say, because it's going to give you resources and it gives you blast damage. Gomorian Guard, we already talked about, is fairly disappointing in terms of a weenie when you see it. Feeding the Pit only triggers if you're capturing cards. And so if it's straight, you know, it's not giving you anything except for the two resources. Yep. And then you can play Almighty Sarlacc, but if you're running Sith, the only one you can play it on is Feeding the Pit because it has to be a Tatooine objective. You can do damage to it, but then you're just weakening your own objective without any hope of ever healing it. I mean, that just seems like it's a very mixed card in terms of what you get out of it.
Yeah, it's really getting the resources out of Bib and getting Spice Visions. And I might be dead wrong on that. This might not be the way to go at all. But it just feels like without proper testing that, that's going to be good.
Whoa. Tiny. Did you just say, I might be wrong, that this is not definitively the best thing and best idea you've ever had ever?
I got to say this right now. I don't know anything. Everything I'm saying might be wrong today. Edge of Darkness has me in a new spot in the galaxy. Give me 2 weeks and I might come back with some definitive statements right now.
I'm imagining this podcast will be filled with anybody who is not playing this deck competitively is, you know, whatever insert expletive, you know, you want to have there. But
I don't think I'll say that.
Yeah, well, you don't like to curse on the podcast. You just have to edit out all of mine.
I never curse anywhere.
Uh-huh. All right, so listeners, our long removed, because it was becoming repetitive, pod quiz is back from the dead.
Do I get to quiz you, Ben?
No, Tiny. You're the one who says how important this is. I really just feel stressed and unfortunate every time I get quizzed. So it's going to be your turn to be quizzed. Great. Isn't that exciting?
It would be if I knew any of the numbers right now.
Oh, that's going to be great. Let's see. So I'm going to randomly pick
number 5. I know pod 5.
I bet you don't. should I? Not only am I going to pick an objective set that you don't know the number of, but I'm going to pick one that I think you've never even played all the cards in it of. How's that for options?
That seems rude, actually.
Yeah, well, this is your objective set that you need to guess. Or no. Are you ready for this, Tiny? Stop clicking. I know you're looking at the cards already. You're secretly looking at the cards.
I'm not looking at the cards.
Stop clicking. The objective that you have to guess, objective 77.
77. So 69 is the Wookiees, because how can you forget that?
I don't know what you're referring to there, Tiny.
69 is the Wookiees. 72 I know is the Falcon.
Okay.
So let's see, if there are 22 objective sets.
Oh my god.
There are 11 for each side.
Yep.
So 80 would, and there are two neutrals, a Jedi and a Rebel.
Mm-hmm.
So that means 80 is a neutral, 79 is a neutral, 78 is... All right, so we're looking at either the Rebel or the Jedi. So are we looking at the Jedi one?
No.
The Rebel.
You were off a little bit on this one. So there. So 80 would be the first dark side.
Oh.
79 is neutral, 78 right. is neutral, 77 is either the Rebel or Jedi, and it is the Rebel.
Okay. Well, I think I know this one because it looks promising. I don't know all of it, but I know some of it.
Sure.
So it has the Alderaan objective that's... I don't remember what it does. I don't think it does anything.
No, it does. It's got two resources, six health capacity. When this objective is destroyed, increase the Death Star dial by one.
Yes, so it has a negative.
It has a negative.
It has Bail in it, who's really cool. He costs like two, maybe?
Three.
Does he have a resource?
He has a resource.
And he has maybe a tactics as well?
He has one tactics with the ability when an Alderaan objective isn't in play, the unit gains the tactics.
Right. And then when he, isn't it when Alderaan objective is destroyed, he dies?
Yep.
Okay. So he gets two tactics of an Alderaan, is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And doesn't he have like three health also?
He has three health.
Wow. Yep.
And he has three force icons.
How many?
Three force icons.
Okay. So Bail is awesome. Cause you can just play, is it a limit one or not?
It is a limit one.
Yeah. So you're only going to play one anyway. You don't have to choose it. So he could be phenomenal without it anyway. Okay, so we got Bail. There's that amazing dude that costs zero and has like three force icons. The art.
Two health, three horse. Yep, it's the Alderaanian artist.
So he's phenomenal. Then the rest of the pod, I have no idea. So, let's see.
So what's the one card I've been saying over and over again that's the wrong name for it?
Oh, it has Tantive IV in it. That's right.
It does have Tantive IV.
What does Tantive IV do? I don't remember.
So it's a five cost, three health, Rebel capital ship. One black blast, three white blast. Hold on. One black blast, two white blasts. With the reaction, after this unit enters play, search the top five cards of your deck for a unique unit. Reveal it, add it to your hand, shuffle the remaining cards back into your deck.
Yeah, that sounds amazing to me.
Yeah, it's a nice search ability.
A unique unit, though, so you really... There aren't as many in the game as you might think.
Right.
But it's only... It says unit, right? Not character?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Right.
I actually don't have any idea what's in the rest of the pod.
Sure. So there's an enhancement, a Rebel enhancement called Diplomatic Presence. Enhance an objective you control. Enhanced objective cannot be engaged unless each other objective you control has been engaged this phase.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it can be. Okay, so that seems good. I haven't figured out exactly how this works. You know, what the best way to play it on is. And so I've thought about it. I was like, okay, so if I have something like, you know, the Secret of Yavin 4 out. Do I play this on the Secret of Yavin 4 to make it so that they can't engage? You know, so there's only one, you know, there, so at that point there's Secret of Yavin 4, which has 6 health, and one other objective that they can engage. They can't engage the third one, right? And then you can redirect. I just don't know what the best way to do it is.
I think so, because whenever Secret of Yavin 4 is out, I just attack it, because otherwise... You're just spreading damage around to other objectives. You've got to go for Secrets of Yavin 4. And so if you make it so they can't even attack it, that's really difficult.
One of the things I was wondering about, and I imagine it's purposely worded this way for that, is so there's a neutral objective called Opening Moves, and this is the one that has Proximity Mine. And it says, the first engagement your opponent declares during his conflict phase must be declared against a Yavin 4 objective, if able.
Right.
And so if you were to put diplomatic presence on a Yavin, the only Yavin 4 objective, does that mean they can't, the if able must mean that they can strike it, right?
I think the if able means they don't have to strike the Yavin 4-1 because they're not able to.
Right. Okay. So it's not like you're not locking them into something that's unattackable at that point.
Yeah, I don't think you're saying you can attack nothing now.
Right. That would be really fun.
That would not be fun. That would be bad.
It's so fun.
Everybody would playing that combo.
Well, I mean, it's a combo, right? And it requires a lot of cards, so I can't imagine it's like the most effective way of doing that. But when you set it up, it's like the infinite Leia combo, right? It's five cards. You're never going to try and get all five cards for the infinite Leia combo.
Right.
But, you know.
But this is also only a two-card combo.
Yeah, it's only a two-card combo. That's true.
A lot different.
And then the last card in the objective set is a zero-cost event called Misdirection. It's an action, move one damage from an objective you control to another objective you control.
That seems kind of blah. It's not too bad, actually, I guess, like...
Zero cost. I mean, yeah. If it's that one objective that's going to destroy the, it can be good. Or if it's something that can return on one of the ones that says while this objective is undamaged.
And you know what? That could go in a whole archetype with the Daughters of Alia. So you have potentially five cards in your deck that can heal things, and so you're moving damage around and healing them. That could be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably another good example of if you can stop 11 points worth of objective damage going against your objectives, you have a better chance of winning the game.
Yes, definitely. I don't quite understand why this is a limit one. Like, it's a really cool objective set, and then you're like, oh, it's only one. It just doesn't feel as useful.
I don't know if I could tell you the answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, just there's some where you see it and you're like, okay, that's why it's limit one. This one, it just doesn't feel that strong. Like, if it were not, I guess Bale is just really strong.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even think Bale is that strong. You have to choose between using him as a resource. He costs three. He only has one tactics icon and he'll get a second one. But I mean, there are cards out there. I mean, I guess if you're comparing it to the Anzadi Elite, who got two given black tactics icons, and the way they balanced that was making it four costs with only one health. I mean, I guess, yes, this is a more versatile card than that. But, I mean, I think he's very similar to Mon Mothma, where Mon Mothma looks pretty good. But, you know, when you have to make that decision between using her, the only difference being that this is your black tactics as opposed to white tactics.
Right. Tantive 4, I think, is the card that would be fun to build a deck around, but you can't really do that with only one copy of it.
Right.
Yep, so it's an interesting pod that I don't know how much we'll see. I hope somebody plays it so I can see it in action. It's funny because that's when I learn the most about these pods, is when I see other good players playing them. You know, I have in my own mind, well, that doesn't look that good because of this reason, and then I see someone else play it, and they play it in a way I hadn't really considered, and that's when I say, oh, wow, yeah, that one looks really good. I hadn't even considered that possibility.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly you can pigeonhole cards into they have to be done this way scenarios. So that's interesting.
So, Ben, it's time for the card of the week. And my card of the week is Bamboozle. This is a two-cost smuggler event that is in the Falcon pod, of course, because it has all the best cards. It says action, move one focus token from a target character to another target character unit. This card is phenomenal. You can use it offensively, even if your opponent is running an entirely vehicle deck. You can attack with Han, use this to move a focus to a lesser character of yours, and then attack with Han again. Or you can use it to tactics out a Palpatine or a Vader or a card that is about to kill one of your cards. The only downside is it costs two, and leaving two back somewhat telegraphs the card.
Yeah, I can see that. My card of the week, also, and I don't know if this is fair, but it also comes from the Falcon pod.
Wow.
And it actually is the Millennium Falcon itself. And that might be a little bit of a cop-out. It's like picking Luke that first week or whatever. I just think it's an amazing card. I mean, it literally has almost the max number of battle icons or you know, blast damage icon, whatever they're called. What are they called? Battle icons?
Sure.
Conflict icons?
Whatever.
Of possible, it looks like, on a card. You can only have, there's only space for one more on it. It has Edge. It has its amazing ability. I've used it before. I've been desperate to win Edge battles. I bounce it back to my hand, put a character into play, and then use it for its three Edge icons. It is an amazing card. It's also really, really pretty to look at.
Yeah, and there is no arguing with Falcon being card of the week other than, really, Ben?
Come on, man. Come on, super obvious, I know.
I'm going to pick Palpatine.
I'm gonna pick Lobot.
Lobot. Poor Lobot.
I was just looking at that objective while you were talking, and I was like, that actually could work pretty well in a deck that requires a lot of shields. Because it comes with Security Control Center, which is after a unit enters play, place one shield on that unit.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I guess.
you're like, nope.
No, not at all, actually. It's just one of those pods where I just haven't thought about this pod enough. Like, I've looked at it, and in decks I was building, I've looked at it and said, this doesn't really fit. But that's the cool thing about the card pool now. There are all these archetypes that didn't exist before that maybe there's the Lobot deck, and it's all built around Lobot. I don't know. I can't wait to see.
I mean, I was running a straight Jedi Weenie deck, right? That used the shields a lot to try and keep the damage, and then it had preparation for battle to try and get to that point where the shields matter. So if you had this, if you played Jedi Smugglers, where Defense of Cloud City was in it, it would be probably pretty cool to have an extra shielding card.
Yeah, I mean, this could be pretty cool with preparation for battle. Whenever stuff comes in, it can't, for the first couple turns, it can't be damaged.
And then when it comes in, at the end of it, you're putting things in with blast icons.
Yeah, so that's actually a cool idea. I don't know what that deck would look like, but you know what? I'm sure we'll see soon enough.
Yeah, right? It's unavoidable. Well, that's it, everybody. That's another episode in the bag. 17 down, Tiny. Does it feel like we've been doing it this long?
It's starting to, yeah.
It's starting to. I know you were completely in disbelief that we had hit 17. Just a reminder to everybody that we're going to do another live streaming event. This time it's going to just be me and Tiny playing against each other. I'm going to cheat. Definitely won't look at his stream to know what cards he has in his hands. We're going to do that at 9:30 on Tiny's Twitch account. So that's www.twitch.tv/TinyGrimes, 9:30 a.m. Western. Is it Standard Time right now? Pacific Standard
Western,
Time?
I believe we go by Pacific.
Yeah, I think it's Pacific Standard Time. See some people there, probably, hopefully.
Yeah, should be fun. It'll be an event. Come watch Ben and I continue our grudge match. I called Smugglers. He'll be playing Scum. So we'll see who has the advantage.
Oh, my God. I'm going to get so crushed.
I think it might be fair if we switch sides.
Nope, I don't think that's...
I mean is we both play a game.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm just
going to... how that's the way the game's structured.
Right. But we have to play exactly... I guess your Scum deck will be different than my Scum deck, but I'll probably end up playing the exact same Smugglers deck.
All right. Well, we'll see you on Thursday. And yep. Until next time...
May the Force be with you.